This is the MLWRadio.com network.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews, and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network. I'm your host, Stray Guy, is always joined by my man, Dylan, who recently attempted to watch the Daytona 500, Dylan.
I love how that's where we're starting the show off. It has to start, it all starts with the Daytona 500. You know,
well, I know you want to talk about it.
I mean, it took over my life. It's changed my life, Striga, since I watched this.
Yeah.
So, basically, Ken, my loved, beloved great-grandpa Ken, was always a huge NASCAR fan. Well, not always, but, you know, for like 20 years. Like the last 20 years or something. He suddenly started liking NASCAR. And I used to watch this more as a kid, but it was kind of boring, to be honest with you. And I didn't really know how to choose favorites or anything like that, and there's a lot of intricacies in NASCAR that maybe the common eye doesn't know, Striga. That's what you don't understand. When you just watch it, you just think, oh man, these guys are just driving around in circles. But when you analyze it, when you look deep down, you see that there are so many intricacies that are in there. And all wrestling, you know, I've watched some different kinds of racing in my day. I used to race like motocross. I was big into the X Games and stuff when I was younger. I did that before. I've watched Formula One. That's big in Europe, right?
It is, yes.
There you go. See, so I have a little bit of racing experience, kind of. Like, not really, but kind of. And this is a lot different, but the race was horrible. There was a huge wreck, like, five laps in that took out half the field. There was, like, 20 cars that got wrecked out. There was all kinds of craziness going on. And there was a rain delay for 10 hours. I ended up just switching it over to basketball. Because I'm a lot more interested in that. I mean, long before that, like, you know, probably about 10 or 15 minutes into the delay, I was like, all right, I've had enough of this. And, you know, I went into my room. I played some video games. I did some things. I was watching some wrestling, some of which we're going to talk about on this very show, Striga. It just so happened. So, in a way, the Daytona 500 led me to Tokyo Joshi Pro and DDT.
It really did. And that's, as you said, that's the topics that we have for today. After our last show we did on Pro Wrestling NOAH and on New Japan Pro Wrestling, we are here to discuss TJP's Positive Chain event.
Speaking of train wrecks, or car crashes, oh. That New Japan show.
Great. That we watched. Great transition there, yes. DDT's Kawasaki Strong, of course, and we're going to talk about the Budokan card for Stardom in March. So these are our topics today. But I first want to go into the debut of the newest young Lion, Dylan. We talked about him on our last show, Yuto Nakashima. He got injured in his debut, so very unfortunate thing for him to happen.
That sucked. He was only in there for like 30 seconds, and then he immediately got injured. But he had a great intensity to him. I liked his presence that he had, even as a rookie. He really had, like, you know, he's been watching his Shibata tapes, I feel like, because he had that intensity where he stomped into the ring. We talked about his real sports background leading into it. So he looked good for what he had, but it was so short. And, you know, It's an unfortunate roadblock in his career. Another racing reference here we're going to have here. Is that what this whole show is going to be?
Not the WCW wrestler roadblock, by the way.
No, definitely not him. Somebody went to the wall. Another WCW wrestler out there, and you are adjacent, not in, but adjacent to Berlin. Another WCW wrestler.
Oh wow!
So we're transitioning from NASCAR to WCW. Two horrible things that nobody should want to talk about. But that's where we're going now, and that's where it's taken us. But yes, the rookie, he looked pretty decent for what little we saw, but there's not enough to tell, just an unfortunate injury.
Yeah, exactly. So he'll be out for the remainder of the tour now. Hopefully he can get a proper debut match now. But that's going to be an interesting story, too, because that's not really happened ever in recent years that someone debuted and got injured right away.
No, I can't remember that you know, very often. It's a very rare thing.
So we'll see about Ryuta Nakashima, but for now, that's it for New Japan Pro Wrestling. Let us move to our first topic of the show today, Tokyo Yoshi Pro's Positive Chain 2021. The name of the show, in my opinion, Dylan, was very appropriate because it was an overall good show, had a very positive vibe, good energy to it. It was basically like every TJP show, very enjoyable.
Yeah, you know, it's not like it's going to be 10, you know, 5 matches of the year or anything like that, but it has its own little run in into the wrestling scene, and even in the Joshi pro wrestling scene, it adds a very good piece, it has a very good place in the scene, because you have a mix of good wrestling, but also, it's a very laid-back show at the end of the day. It's very lighthearted, it's not the utmost seriousness, but some matches you could get there and have some great wrestling in there too, so it's a good mix of that style, pretty much.
Yes, they established some tag teams on this show for their upcoming tag team tournament that they are going to do, and we'll get into that a bit later here in our show. First of all, I want to tackle this just like we did on our last show from the top. What did you think about the main event between Rika Tatsumi defending her Prince of Princess title for the first time against her tag team partner Mio Watanabe? Cage match rating 8.55 right now.
Well, that's really high.
It is.
But I liked it, though. I do have to say I liked it. I like any time. That's kind of like a thing of mine that I really like in wrestling. That's something I always have. That's an automatic hook for me, is whenever teammates wrestle each other. Mm-hmm. I think that's a really cool story. That's an automatic story. It's something nice to say because it's something you never see a lot, too. If you're a team, you're wrestling with each other, not really against each other in any circumstance. So I always love seeing that. And I thought that these two worked pretty decently together. I was especially impressed with Watanabe. I think she showed a lot in this match. I actually thought this was better than the match where Tatsumi won over Sakazaki. I don't know if that's a hot take or not, but I thought this was a better match than that one overall. And I thought Tatsumi is really growing into her role as champion. Again, something that I wasn't really expecting, you know, when she won the title, but I think she's growing into it quickly and doing a good job. I like this match, personally.
First of all, I agree that she's growing into her role, and you could really see that also on the press conference that they showed in the video before the match. They showed both of them being very sincere about the title match, so that came across very well as the main event of the show. And then Mio Watanabe, I thought, played a great role in this match. Of course, Tatsumi went for her leg very early on. Then that culminated in Watanabe not being able to deliver one of her core moves that she does, the giant swing. That led to her breaking down because her leg was worked over by Tatsumi before. But then she powered through and did the giant swing nonetheless. That was a very cool moment in the match, I thought. So from her part, there was good work, but also Rika Tatsumi, as you said. She wrestled more in a way of a main event level talent and not so much as a challenger that is probably an underdog like she was against Yuka Sakazaki. So she's finding her role right now. And as you said, tag team partners wrestling, always a good story, and for a first defense, also a very easy story to tell.
Yep, I agree with you. Good booking to even put this together. And I think Watanabe impressed a lot of people and how she strapped up, which is kind of like the same with Tatsumi. So I like that their story kind of continues, even though they're not really a tag team right now. I mean, they are a tag team, but obviously she's more focused on the championship right now as a singles wrestler. But still, it's like their story still continues overall.
What would you say to the user Gregor, who's posted underneath our question about the show? He says, the Positive Chain is probably my favorite event this year. Everything hit. The two singles title matches were awesome. Match of the year candidates.
Wow, he really liked them, then yeah. I have to say. I like this match, and I like the show, honestly, so I can't really say otherwise, but I don't think that this was a show of the year candidate for me. But I don't think it was really even meant to be that either. So it really must have overachieved expectations for Gregor. But still, you know, for me, I liked it. Just not that much. But I still really liked it, though.
Yeah, me too. I thought it was a good main event, and both were able to look very good here. On the topic of the second singles title, maybe we'll just go to that right now, because Yuki Kamifuku, she really, really impressed me a lot in this match. We talked about her in November when we talked about the big show last year for TJP in Tokyo Dome City Hall. Then we talked about her on the January 4 show of TJP, where she was in a tag team match. And now she had another title defense of the International Princess title against Mirai Mayumi. And this match was under 10 minutes long, but I thought it was a very, very good showing for Kamifuku, as she displayed that she is very much improving in the last couple of months. Specifically, this hit me when she did this great-looking Manji Gatame. Mayumi came out of the ropes, and she captured her into this Manji Gatame, and that looked really well. Probably, this was these two practicing before the match, but to me, that's, of course, totally fine. Especially when you have a talent that is still learning how to do the job inside the ring, it's completely fine that you practice things and that you go through most things that happen in your match and just don't make up things on the fly. So I guess that's what happened here, and execution was very good, I thought.
I really have no clue about that, what they were doing to prepare for it or how much they worked together. I'm sure they practiced a little bit together. Like you said, totally fine, totally normal, honestly. You know, it was. I thought it was a good match. I agree with you that Kamifuku looked better than she did in her title win. Again, kind of like I was saying about Tatsumi in the main event, I think they both improved even from a one-month-to-month basis. I thought they had a good showing here rather than last year where I thought she looked, not last year, but last month, where she looked really shaky, I thought, in her title win. Mm-hmm. And I think she did a lot better here. And I got to give it up for Mayumi. I'm a huge fan of this girl. I think she's got a ton of potential, yes. And I love seeing her wrestle. I think she deserves a lot of credit. And, you know, that match with Hikari Noah, and Noah's somebody I'm high on too, but I think that match really didn't work as well. But for whatever reason, Kamifuku, like you said, maybe they practiced more together. It wasn't a tournament match. It wasn't a second match on the show. But to me, Mayumi is like really impressed me, and she's been impressing me every time I see her. She's somebody who really stands out every time I watch these undercards, and now she gets a title match here, and I thought she totally knocked it out of the park, delivering against somebody who maybe doesn't have a history of these great matches, but I thought here, this is probably one of her best performances, and I really think you have to credit Mayumi with a lot of that, and I think her work is really phenomenal for her stage in her career, yeah. And I just think the sky's the limit.
Another very positive thing about her is that she finally got a new theme. Old MacDonald is gone.
Who predicted this, Striga, at the start of the year? That was one of my predictions.
Yeah. undefeated predictions.
Undefeated, baby. I love it. Yes, but she had a new song. Old MacDonald, his farm has been torn down.
Oh, my God.
It's gone. All the animals.
Maybe he just retired, Dylan.
Well, I mean, he could have. You know, he let the animals roam free in the farm. He sent them into the woods, and now he lives in a farm all on his own. But it's not a farm anymore. It's just a building now.
On the topic of Mirai Mayumi, I had a discussion on Twitter, too, with the user ClickClackKathy, and she says a lot of eyes were on Mirai going in. She still looks like a future U-type potential ace for them. But I think she and Kamiyu could be a big international star, not Maki meme level, but up there. The look and work is all coming together for her at the same time. What do you think about that?
I totally agree with everything Kathy said. I think that Mayumi is the one that will have the work rate skills, but Kamiyu will have the appeal, like Maki Ito, the meme appeal, as she adequately described it, or accurately described it even, I would say. I think that's actually a perfect comparison, like those two wrestlers. Mayumi could really grow into that work rate style and have great matches, and Kamiyu could have great appeal to the masses, so to speak.
Yeah, and I also noticed that Mayumi got a new outfit specifically for these two big shows. She was on this one and, of course, also on the Kawasaki Strong Show in the six-man tag match. So big moments for her this weekend, showing that TJP and DDT think a lot of her.
Absolutely. Like I said, the sky's the limit. And I love watching a wrestler wrestle. Again, for a young wrestler like her, she's doing a fantastic job.
Yeah, she is. So that's the title matches, the singles title matches on the show. There was another title match for the Princess Tag Team title. The Bakuretsu sisters, Nodoko Tenma and Yuki Aino, defended their titles against Hyper Misao and Shin Ultra Shoko. I think this was the last time for Shoko Nakajima to appear in this role as the sidekick of Hyper Misao. And she was not only a sidekick in a metaphorical way, she was her legit sidekick, because Hyper Misao came out on her bike and there was a little, like, what's it called? Sidecar. Yes, yeah. A little sidecar to her, where Shin Ultra Shoko had to basically run or walk beside the bicycle, which looked pretty goofy but very funny.
You wouldn't see that in NASCAR.
You would not. Well, the match itself, it was a lot of shenanigans of Misao and Shoko. Tenma and Yuki Aino, they were annoyed of their opponents, which totally played into the match. I wasn't a big fan of it, to be quite honest.
It wasn't the greatest, I would say. This match filled a role on the show. At the end of the day, it wasn't supposed to be a great match by any stretch of the imagination, I would argue, but it was a comedic match with Hyper Misao to do her thing. That's always her role on the card. Shoko isn't doing anything important, and she gets a team with her real-life friend and do this goofy comedy gimmick. So that's all it was at the end of the day. It's just a completely nonsensical match, and either you will enjoy that style. For Tokyo Joshi Pro, I think it's more acceptable than like a more serious company, because you kind of expect something like this. But yeah, for me, it's not always my favorite, to say the least.
Good for Shoko Nakajima that she can be her own now again, and we'll see where Hyper Misao goes from here. Definitely, she had this match with Mecha Mami a couple of days before this event on the Chris Brooks produced show. The Mecha Mami match, I thought it was very funny. I really liked how they approached it, with Hyper Misao first coming in as herself and then noticing that she can't do anything against this machine. So she became a machine herself and came out again to confront Mecha Mami. But that unfortunately led to both of them getting water on their systems and thus being seemingly electrocuted. Were you shocked when you saw that they were seemingly electrocuted?
You know, it felt like they had to hit the kill switch on the match, go down pit road, and have to, you know, get repairs, it felt like.
Yeah. Yeah, luckily they weren't electrocuted. They were just unable to function. That's what Hyper Misao also explained after the match. So
some could say that they ran out of gas. Also,
do you have a list of NASCAR?
like I said, don't count me out. I may stretch to other racing styles sooner or later. And speaking of racing styles, I have to say, we failed to call it what it should. I think we need to call it what it should right now. As a fan of superheroes myself, you know, I've always been a fan of comic books. Did you ever like comic books or superheroes or even Marvel movies?
I tried to get in comic books when I was younger. I tried when I was a little older, but I could never really get into those superhero comic books. But I kind of always was a fan, even though, or I tried to be a fan at least, even though I couldn't really get into it.
I understand. I totally understand that. I was a longtime fan from a very young age. This is well known, of the Power Rangers.
Yes.
As Sentai. Those were my heroes growing up, but also I like the comic book heroes. To me, and one of my favorite stories, when I was a kid, when I was like 2, 3, 4 years old, maybe more like 2 or 3, but regardless, I had a VHS tape of Batman Forever that I would watch every single day, literally. Like, in this era, there really weren't that many channels either. It was still like 30 channels or something we had. So I would watch that damn VHS tape every single day. I watched it for a year straight, literally like 300 days in a row. I could memorize that whole thing. But we have to call it Misao's car with the sidecar. It must be called the Misao Mobile, not just like the Batmobile.
Yes.
And we missed that.
We did. Oh, man.
I couldn't let it slide. I couldn't let it slide, Stringer. Just like I couldn't let that NASCAR pun slide. I had to say it.
On a little more serious note, this was the tag title match, and most of the show was designed to get new tag teams over for their upcoming tag team tournament that is named Futariwa Princess Max Heart Tournament. So they got a few tag teams over on this show, specifically Dylan, one tag team that, in my opinion, had a great showing on this card, both in and after the match, Maki Ito and Mio Yamashita.
Maki Ito's reaching a new level. She's hit fourth gear in her career right now. She is really doing great things. And no surprise, honestly, it really helps working with a talent like Miyu Yamashita, that you're going to have great chemistry with her, whether as opponents or as teammates, because you know that Yamashita is going to bring the absolute best out of everyone she works with, one of the best overall performers on the roster, in my opinion. And I think that teaming with her was a great idea and really helps Maki, in preparation for some of the biggest runs of her career with this AEW tournament. She's got a ton of buzz with all of that going on. She's got a ton of buzz with her match versus Miyu last month that got a lot of rave reviews. So to me, she's heading into the biggest part of her career coming up. So for her to step up is such a great thing. And this tag team is nothing but a great idea booking-wise to help get her over and help improve her as a performer.
Yes, absolutely. I can't agree more. Basically, they agreed to team together after their singles match in January. And it seems like that a little of Maki Ito's madness has gone over to Mio Yamashita too, because at one point in the match, it really looked like that Sakisama and Mei Saint-Michel were getting the best of Ito and Yamashita. But then they just continued to, from the top of their lungs, scream at one another, which was pretty cool to see, because really no one can make a sound of the fans right now. So they were all watching in awe as they were screaming at one another, which then ultimately led to Yamashita. She was getting kicked by Sakisama, but hit one of her great-looking kicks herself to take her out. And in the end, it was Maki Ito with a flying big head on Mei Suruga, known as Mei Saint-Michel in her role here. Also want to put her over here because I thought she looked very good too. This is a good addition to the roster and for the tag team of her and Sakisama.
Perfect partner for Saki. Great worker, can handle all the in-ring stuff. Saki, very charismatic. And much like the Maki, I think these are two very well-balanced teams, actually, because you have the one that's very popular, kind of memeified, like Kathy said earlier on our Twitter, but then you have the worker of the team, and it totally works. But they're also charismatic in their own way, too. It's not like they're just like some bland person. Suruga is very charismatic, actually, in her role. So she's just a wonderful performer, in my opinion. And Saki-sama and Maki Ito played their roles to perfection, I thought, and did a great job in their own right. So, yeah, I thought this was a really good match. Probably, you know, you could argue the second best match on the show.
I would say it was the second best match of the show. At least I enjoyed it after the title match the most.
Yeah. So you would put this ahead of the Princess title match?
I would, but the Princess title match is a close third to this one.
Yeah, that was a good match, too. I mean, that match was like under 10 minutes, too. This one had a little bit more length to it.
This show, basically, then, as I said, these two teams, very good design here. And one of the issues that TJP has to work with right now is that they kind of had an exodus last year where core members of their mid-card went to Stardom. In, for example, Mina Shirakawa, Natsupoi, and what's her new name? Sakaya Himawari, what's her new name, I think?
It was Unagi something.
Unagi Himawari, I think.
Yeah, was her name.
Exactly. Was her name. So they all went to Stardom, which kind of left the TJP mid-card in kind of a drought. So now the roster looks like they have a lot of experienced wrestlers and a lot of stars on top, of course, and they are designing new stars with Rika Tatsumi too. And then they, of course, have to get new talent over, and they are trying to get more people together. And in the undercard, they tried it. For example, the Magical Sugar Rabbits, Mitsuki and Yuka Sakazaki, they faced the very new team of Ariso Endo and Suzume. We talked about her, Endo. She just debuted against Suzume, and now they were paired against Mitsuki and Yuka Sakazaki in a, for their standards, for their experience level, Endo and Suzume, a very long match in 13 minutes.
Yeah, got to make them stand out in the mid-card. Like you said, the benefits of a match like this isn't necessarily seen in this being a great match in and of itself. It's to help these young girls do better. So if they have a bunch of these matches in 6 months, they can have a great version of this match. So I think it was great booking and smart of Tokyo Joshi Pro in terms of the way they've handled everything. Like you said, there was a mid-card exodus, you could say, of people leaving. And they've done a very good job, I think, of not only, you know, trying to replace those people, you know, trying to bring, you know, grab somebody from Actress Girls or something like that, which was what we saw in the past when Manase and Natsupoi came in the first place, you know, pretty much. They instead, they're building from within with these young talents, and I think they've done a good job of kind of taking this negative aspect and turning it into a positive by helping move along these new girls faster.
Yes, yes, and that's what they are trying to do. Right here on their card, we had two other matches on here that saw Hikari Noah, Mahiro Kiryu, and Shiori Sena lose to Naoka Kutaraku and Yuna Manase as well in the opening match. Haruna Neko and Poma Harajuku defeated Marika Kobashi and Muka Miyamoto. Also like they're showing very much. I've said it before, I think that Marika Kobashi is very talented and could be a star for them down the line. So that was the show. And as I said, they have this tag team tournament coming up. It starts on February 20 with 4 first round matches. Rika Tatsumi, Mio Watanabe against Poma Harajuku and Haruna Neko. Yuki Kamifuku and Mahiro Kiryu against Muka Miyamoto and Arisu Endo. Nodoka Tenma and Yuki Aino against the Magical Sugar Rabbits. And then Sakisama, Mason Michelle against Marika Kobashi and Raku. It's the first round. And then they have second round matches where Mirai Mayumi and Suzume face the winners of Sakisama and Mason Michelle and Marika Kobashi and Raku. Hyper Misao and Shoko Nakajima continue teaming, but Shoko is back as Nakajima. They face the winner of Makaretsu Sisters against the Magical Sugar Rabbits. Then Hikari Noah and Shiori Sena face the winners of Yuki Kamifuku and Mahiro Kiryu against Muka Miyamoto and Arisu Endo. And Mio Yamashita and Maki Ito face the winners of Rika Tatsume and Mio Watanabe against Pom Harajuku and Haruna Neko. So that's the tag team tournament they have coming up. I think a tournament is always a nice way to kill some time if you don't have anything going right now.
Absolutely, and the way the brackets work, you could say that it would make perfect sense for the Sugar Rabbits to beat the champions right away and then set up them putting up someone else later on, so you would have two challenging teams set up out of this tournament instead of just one. I guess it doesn't have to be the Sugar Rabbits, but that should be how they book it, in my opinion, having the champions lose to a team and then the team that they lose to put over another team in the final, like Yamashita and Maki Ito, for example.
Yeah. I put in a lot of emphasis on Mizuki and Nakazaki being a team again, so I can see that being a story they go with in the future, in the next couple of months. So, Yeah, I guess, let me look at my notes here. That is all that I have for TJP. Anything you want to add?
It just feels like they've had a really good run lately. Pretty much every show, or not every show, but every month, once a month, you have a big show that gets a lot of good reviews from pretty much everybody that watches it. Various different styles, you know, depending on what kind of fan you are. I do think that some of the comedic stuff and some of the lighthearted stuff can be a turnoff for some people, but for the most part, I think it's really good overall that you can turn it in, and even if you're not a fan of that stuff, there'll be something else that can get your attention and make you like the show. And some people, like Gregor said on Twitter, that was one of his favorite shows of the year. So already, you know, they've had two back-to-back shows, because I think the last show was a success too, earlier on in the year, where Tatsumi won. So they're batting 1,000 right now. So yeah, I have to drop all the racing puns now. So I switched to baseball. Now listen, they put the pedal to the metal for this show. But yes, it was a good show, honestly. Really good stuff, and I enjoyed it.
They are on a very good run right now, TJPR, and I think that DDT, very comparably, they also hit a home run of a show, Dylan, with DDT's Kawasaki Strong 2021, where Jun Akiyama won the KOD title at 51 years old. The day after that, Jun Akiyama signed with DDT, while Keiji Muto, 58 years old, of course, GHC heavyweight champion, signed with Pro Wrestling Noah. Jun Akiyama as a head coach and maybe also as an executive. Sanshiro Takagi went out and said that he would like Akiyama to bring in his experience from learning under Giant Baba in All Japan and under Misawa in Pro Wrestling Noah. And of course, he also was president for All Japan for a couple of years and saved them from death, basically. So we'll see what Akiyama's role will be exactly. We'll definitely know he's champion and head coach now. Keiji Muto signed a 2-year deal with Noah and apparently is only a wrestler, Dylan. What do you say about that?
Only a wrestler with great influence with his political abilities. That part's not said in the contract, but let's just say it was written in invisible ink, I guess you'd say, there. But listen, 2-year contract after winning the title, everyone told us that he'd lose the title right away. I don't want to say anything, Striga, but if just 2 days before the contract or any of this press conference stuff got announced, who was saying this, that this might not be as simple as everyone thought?
Well, this show basically put it out. We both said it. The title match, Muto versus Kaito Kiyomiya, is scheduled for March 14 in Fukuoka. So I wouldn't expect the title change there, as we said.
Yeah, but I said it first.
It's very important to you, right?
I took the checkered flag. Okay, I think that'll be my last one for today. But we both said it. We both agreed. We both knew right away. And you were more distrustful of Muto, to be fair, than me. I predicted it, but I wasn't as negative as you. So I think we both can take our victory laps. I can't stop, Stringer. So we can take our victory laps.
Wow.
Well, there was a match on this DDT show that wanted me to jump out of the window during the middle of the race. Okay, no more. Seriously, no more. No more racing. I don't know how it came to this.
We've hit the final lap now, Dylan. We've hit the final lap, so that's it with the racing analogies now.
The white flag is being waved.
Let's get a bit serious here.
Okay.
Jun Akiyama. He signed with DDT. He won the title. What do you say about Jun Akiyama as executive in DDT Pro Wrestling?
I just hope that for his sake, it doesn't burn him out like it felt like the All Japan run, more than anything else. Like you said, there were some ups and downs in his run in All Japan. When he first started out, it felt like he had all kinds of great new ideas. He was instrumental in getting Kento Miyahara over and making him the star that he was. And he, like you said, he deserves a ton of credit for saving that company from its deathbed. But as time went along, it felt like in both his wrestling and him as a booker, him as a president, whatever you want to call him, everything seemed to wear him down, and it felt like it wasn't what it once was by the time he left. And that's why we see when he went to DDT or whether he wrestles in Noah, it feels like he's supercharged from where he was before and very energized. So it feels like that this could go right, but it could go wrong if it's too much for him. And that's the only thing I hope, is that it's not too stressful for him and it doesn't wear him down and we end up in a similar situation as we were in All Japan.
Yeah, that's very important to think about, because DDT, they have their own experience in that and things being very stressful on the managerial position. Because remember when Wrestle One was still around, Sanshiro Takagi was not only the president of DDT, but he also was in the role of the CEO for Wrestle One. So he basically had three jobs, being a wrestler and being an executive for two wrestling companies, which was extremely stressful for him. And also over in All Japan, Suwama was an executive for a couple of months too before stepping down and becoming only a wrestler again, because fulfilling these two roles is extremely hard. Yes. So I'd really love for Akiyama to choose wisely what he's going to do. I think head coach and champion is a full-time job right now, I'd say.
Absolutely. That's more similar than if they try and involve him in business decisions or anything like that, or booking. That's a completely different animal from wrestling or even coaching wrestling. So like you said, hopefully he knows what he's going to do, and they keep that in mind, because like you said, just being a trainer and a wrestler at the same time, and being the champion of the promotion, the face of the promotion for right now, is a big deal, and that's enough as it is.
Yes, yes, it should be. And then, of course, in recent weeks, there have been a lot of discussions about old wrestlers winning things, which of course started in WWE with Edge winning the Royal Rumble. Now we have Keiji Muto winning the GHC heavyweight title, and of course also Jun Akiyama winning the KOD openweight title. Dylan, can you tell us why Akiyama winning the KOD title is not the same as Keiji Muto winning the GHC title?
Yeah, on Twitter I made a post saying what I'm about to say, pretty much, if you didn't see it, but a really big difference between these two, because it's easy to say that Akiyama's a better wrestler than Muto. Everybody knows this. You know, that's not a big secret at the end of the day, but that's not really the point of being a champion. The thing with them is Muto is positioned as a special attraction for Noah, almost. You know, he's going to be there to do his thing, and that's pretty much it. Like, he's all about Muto. We talked about that on the last show, right?
Mm-hmm.
Akiyama, look at his run ever since he came to DDT. Not only has he wrestled a zillion times more matches than Muto, but also all of his stuff that he's done so far has been storylines helping the roster, really bringing up the young guys around him. Look no further than Mizuki Watase. And what's going on with Junretsu, that whole faction, Makoto Oishi, now Yusuke Okada coming into DDT. All of that has his fingerprints on him, and he's done a great job of being unselfish and helping those guys along. Whatever Akiyama does is going to be for the good of the company, not just his wrestling, which we all know is fantastic. We talked about that on the Noah show, too. Akiyama on that show was awesome, and he's no less so in DDT. Everything he's done has been pretty much great, and he's gotten the best out of everyone that he's wrestled up to this point. So everything he does is for the good of the company and benefiting the entire roster, whereas Muto, this was clearly like a vanity title win that they hope will translate into business success, because they're banking on him being a big enough star for that to happen. This isn't necessarily saying Akiyama's a huge star and way bigger than everyone else on the roster, and we need him to be champion. It's more like this was a logical step in the story they've been telling and the stories they've been telling overall. He just happens to be good enough, despite his age, to where it all works.
Yes, and I'm just looking at the statistics here. Muto, since coming into Pro Wrestling Noah at the end of 2019 in his first match as a quote-unquote regular member of the roster, or as a guest of the roster first, he had 16 matches ever since then, but as you said, mostly things to put him over, while Jun Akiyama came into DDT in May of last year and has had 40 matches since, and as you also said, is on the side of the young talent in Hideki Okatani, in Mitsuki Watase, informing the Junretsu stable that Makoto Ishii and Yusuke Okada also, Ishii is a part of, and Yusuke Okada, of course, would like to be a part of, with his mentor Jun Akiyama on top there. So there is a clear difference between Keiji Muto and Jun Akiyama, and just saying they are old isn't something that should delegitimize their title run. I think it comes down to what you pointed out too. What does that man mean to the company right now? And if there's someone that just comes in and wins the title for his sake, you can, of course, do that. But with Jun Akiyama in DDT, this is much more lax to it than Muto in Noah, I think.
And plus, he's still able to work stuff. He can work tag team matches. He can work the tournaments. You know, Muto's not going to be in the N1 or anything like that. Akiyama can do everything that you need him to do as champion. So that is really the one thing physically that is a big deal for them that separates them a bit. Mm. But yeah, just saying he's old, that's not really fair based on his everything he brings to the table. But I understand that. Like, I think if Muto had not just won the title, this wouldn't even be a talking point with him. I think because Muto, who's much older and broken down, and everyone actually knows that, you know, that coming in kind of changed the way people looked at this Akiyama deal, even though it made sense as well. And like, to me, Endo losing the title, this was the perfect time to lose the title anyway. So it's not like that you know, and, like, this didn't lose anything. This doesn't change anything about his reign. You know, that reign was good. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to hate on Endo, but it wasn't any kind of, like, game-changer reign where you know, they had a... Like, Go's reign led them to the Budokan, where they hadn't been in 12 years. This reign was a good title reign, but it's not like it means anything at the end of the day to have him lose to Akiyama. So I really think the Muto thing changed people's opinions on this Akiyama deal. It got them thinking that way, and they got them in a mindset that they shouldn't have been in. And I can't blame them in one sense, because I understand, like, at the end of the day, these are still 50-year-old guys, and he's still 51 years old, no matter how great I think he is. That's true on an aesthetic level, but you have to look a little deeper of it all to see the differences between him and Muto.
Let's also add Matthias' opinion here, user at YanQuinM on Twitter. As weird as this may sound for a 50 years old man, he really is a breath of fresh air after a lot of DDT champions with a similar style. I hope he has a long reign, or at least a nice couple of defenses with guys like Higuchi, Hino, or a Jinretsu member before the imminent Take match, so Takeshita, that is. And I do think that Matthias points out a very important thing here. With Akiyama, we have someone who is a completely different type of champion in DDT that we have not seen in recent time. Of course, Masato Tanaka, also a legend, was champion, but he's a completely different wrestler. And now we can have a lot of fresh matches on top with Akiyama.
And he was more like an outsider. Akiyama is being positioned as a DDT guy going forward, pretty much as well.
And yeah, you won't have a story of a DDT roster member trying to take the title back.
Yeah, and a very important one at that. Like I said, if you really look at how they built this up with the feud with Takeshita, they did that last year, him beating him twice in the tournament. This was a totally logical conclusion, in my opinion. And Matthias, he's a smart guy. I know he knows a lot about wrestling. And I figured that, you know, if you're into wrestling that deep like he is, or like we are, like a lot, most of the people listening to this are, you're going to understand that there's a big difference between Akiyama and Muto. But like I said, if you're more of a casual fan, I understand where you're coming from, just seeing them as older guys, you know, at the end of the day. I understand that too, even though, like I said, to me, on a personal level, and I'm just talking about me, I'm not talking about drawing or anything like that. I'm super happy that Akiyama is the champion, because I know it will lead to great matches that I love. Like, you know, pretty much no matter who he faces, it could be anybody on this roster, and I know Akiyama will get the best out of them. Muto is not like that at all. So it's like it's a world's difference on a personal level to me. But on a public level, I can see why some people would be like that.
By the way, I absolutely agree with everything that you said, and so does the user at Mike Pasqualini on Twitter. Can we get way more behind Uncle Jun as champ as opposed to Muto, as he's still probably one of the best in the world? Yes, Mike. Yes, we can.
Love, Mike. Patreon subscriber, too. Shout out to Mike right now. Big love to you there. And I totally agree with what you said, too.
We talked about Jun Akiyama on our last show too, and kind of talking him up as part of the Big Four in All Japan, or as an additional part of the Big Four in All Japan. Look at his resume right now. World Tag Team Champion in All Japan. GHC Tag Team Champion in NOAH 3 times. 7 times, by the way, in All Japan. 3 times All Asia Tag Team Champion. In All Japan, of course, Gaora TV Champion. GHC Hardcore Openweight Champion in NOAH, DDT Ironman Heavy Metal Champion, but also, of course, won the GHC Heavyweight title 3 times, as well as the Triple Crown 2 times, and now the KOD Openweight title. So, quite a career that Jun Akiyama has assembled, and it's not over yet.
No, this is a completely new chapter. You know, 2 years ago, we thought it was pretty much, he was going to ride it out, be similar to where Baba was, you know, 3 decades ago, just doing undercard tag matches. Maybe if they need him in a pinch, in an emergency or something like that, he could come out and do something. But besides that, it was pretty much over, his days of having big matches or anything like that. And in DDT, he's rewriting the book, rewriting the ending on his story, pretty much. And I love to see it, because he's a legendary performer, one of the best of all time. I thought what you said on the other show that we did, the show we did a couple days ago, was so wonderful, and I couldn't even add anything to what you said about him. Total legend and one of the best of all time as a worker, and everything about him.
Even his last title run that he was on with Yuji Nagata as the All Asia Tag Team Champion was more of a nostalgia title run than anything else. So this one, as you said, a completely new chapter of his career. And why don't we get into the match here in the main event of Kawasaki Strong. He defeated Tetsuya Endo in 31 minutes in a match that also, much like the TJP main event, is right now rated at 8.55 on Cage Match. What did you think?
I liked it. I thought it was a good match. You know, like I just said, I was making this point a little bit, and I think I agree with it in this match as well. I think Akiyama knows how to get the best out of all of his opponents. And to me, Endo is a much different style of opponent than Takeshita, who has had Akiyama's best matches so far at DDT. But still, Akiyama was able to work with Endo and make the best of his style. They did some good stuff here, and I thought that Endo really stepped up.
Yes.
I'm always going to have his problems whenever they do the limb work and all of that, because I do think he blows them off a little bit. And I don't think it really matters to a lot of the DDT fans, but I'm just talking about me right now. But I love what he brought to the table. Whatever he lacked in that, he brought and made up for in terms of his emotion that he brought to this match. He made this feel like this title was his lifeblood, and he really, really, really didn't want to lose it to Jun Akiyama here. And I thought that's what put the match over the top to me, was that, yes, they structured the match really well and made the most of Endo's strengths, but he stepped up in terms of being a true champion until the end and fighting Akiyama off to the best of his ability, and that made the ultimate end where Akiyama won that much better, in my opinion. So I enjoyed this match. I thought it was Endo. Like I said, I'm hot and cold on him. I'm not down on him because he's had matches that I've loved and thought were great, but I think overall this is one of his better performances.
Yeah, I'm very happy that Endo brought what I kind of talked up on our last episode, where I kind of compared Takeshita and Endo to one another. I thought that Endo in this match brought more of a mat game to Akiyama, and of course that's due to Akiyama being in there as well, but his aerial work was a little down in comparison to other matches. For example, in the match that he won the title back against Masato Tanaka, there was a lot more aerial action from Tetsuya Endo. But of course, this was also part of the story that Akiyama had to minimize the aerial attacks that Tetsuya Endo threw at him, while at the same time benefiting from his other ways to go with inside the ring. The Yurikamome that he had on Akiyama on the ground looked very good, but Akiyama, in my opinion, came in with a very great game plan in the storyline, also bursting out a move that completely caught me off guard when he suddenly did the jumbo suplex, Dylan.
And why would we not love that? At the end of the day, the jumbo suplex was awesome in my book.
Yes, man, absolutely. I rewound that again to see that again, because also on commentary they put it over as such a surprising element of the match. And in the end, after 31 minutes, the wrist clutch exploder, Dylan, was not enough to finish Tetsuya Endo, which I do think that put him over strongly here, even in defeat, but it had to be kind of a modified version of the sternest dust alpha.
A great move, by the way. So I love seeing that. That was almost, I thought that was cool too. That felt like more of a callback to his Noah days when he started doing those kind of moves, the sternest dust and all of that, more so than his All Japan days. So I thought that was a cool little wrinkle too. And to your point about Endo maybe bringing in less high flying stuff than in his other matches, I think that was a good thing, to be honest with you, especially against someone like Akiyama, who I think stylistically they ended up clashing a lot better than they would have if this had been more of a typical Endo performance. I think Endo smartly, and to his credit, worked a better style of match wrestling Akiyama, and it totally worked. Like I said, it was for the benefit of both of them at the end of the day, and I thought they came together to have a very good win here, and I love the emotion that Endo showed as well.
After the match, Jun Akiyama called out Katsusada Higuchi, the man he lost to in the D-King Grand Prix tournament. And Akiyama later said that he can only be a good champion or a true champion if he defeats the man that defeated him. So that's a logical title match. Good title defense, first title defense for him. That's going to go down on March 28 in Curriken Hall, and I can't wait for the match.
Oh, that's going to be totally awesome. And one other thing that Akiyama brings to the table as champion, which is a totally good thing, is that he gives added credibility to the title, therefore this entire promotion, therefore every wrestler in the promotion that he faces, is that he adds extra credibility to a company that kind of needs it. Like, they're a big company in their own right. They deserve a lot of credit for doing their thing. But to have a champion like Akiyama, who was a mainstream star, and somebody that just all of his matches feel very real, you know, very, very sports-like, he adds that. Whereas Muto, it's like he's not really giving legitimacy to any of these guys at the end of the day. The most you can hope for is that he's a big enough star to do it. But stylistically, Akiyama has that much more realistic style that is so needed in DDT, especially as a champion, which is something I really always loved about Takeshita. Whenever he would be the champion, I thought he added so much, and I thought it worked out. You know, in the past, we've gone to it in the past. Look when he was champion originally, and they took the title off of him, and they were doing some crazy stuff. That was around the time they were going with, like, Sasaki and Dino as champion.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, things went down, you know? Even among the DDT fans, people know what DDT is. But if you want to step up and be a bigger company, you need credibility with people. And I think Akiyama totally adds that. So I don't see any negatives to Akiyama's champion at all.
It's almost like that people want serious programs on top of the pro wrestling program, right?
I've been saying it for years.
Crazy.
I mean, the thing is, it's not even me saying it. It's just logical. Like, at the end of the day, like, anybody should believe that. But for some people, it feels like they try and wrap their heads around these crazy ideas that have no evidence, it feels like. Yeah. And like, plenty of evidence that show that if you have something that people want to believe in and people are emotionally invested in, then that's going to be what elevates a company and draws more. Even that is one thing that you could say emotionally that Muto brought to that Noah build. It's because there was real emotion of people not wanting him to win the title. And I think that actually added a lot to all of that. So if you have something you're emotionally invested in, that means so much more than just you know, a normal title, right? And he brings extra credibility. So whoever takes this title off of him, whether it's Takeshita, whether it's Iguchi, whether it's Endo again, who even knows? Like, wherever they go with it, it's going to benefit them greatly. And I think that's automatic, in my opinion. More than it would be beating Endo.
I am 100% sure that it's going to be Takeshita.
I agree with you. I think
you got to credit DDT too. When Endo lost to Tanaka in the tournament before he won the title, from him, we said that it's going to be Endo who wins the title back for DDT, and that happened. And the story that they are telling now, the seeds that they have planted, is clear that Konosuke Takeshita is going to be the one to defeat Akiyama in the end.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you. And it's smart booking. It was the right time for Endo to win. It wasn't the right time for Takeshita back then. It would have benefited Endo more. Yep. Here, it benefits Takeshita more.
Absolutely. So the second highest title in DDT after the DDT Extreme title is now basically a championship for their Rojo Pro Wrestling, for their Street Pro Wrestling, is the DDT Universal title that kind of started as a different title, but due to international travel not really being available right now, this is now the second highest in the company, and a match and a story that also relied heavily on match wrestling, on submission wrestling, was Yuki Ueno versus Yukio Sakaguchi. And I want to right go here to Rob's question. He told us, ask Dylan how he feels about Ueno winning via submission. That really bothered me. Why can't Sakaguchi have his strengths and Ueno his own? Unless if Ueno is going to become a submission guy, I don't see the positives of that finish. What do you say?
First of all, I have to say, what is this Ask Dylan stuff? I'm on that account too. Like, did you think I wasn't going to see it myself?
I think Rob thinks that mostly I'm tweeting from that account, which is true.
Well, that is true. You definitely handled the Twitter account more, but still, like, I'm there. It's not like I'm a ghost in this.
Don't ghost Dylan.
Yeah, don't ghost me. That's not nice at the end of the day. But I'm here.
We're just messing with you, of course.
Yeah, it's okay. Robert's a great person. I'm going to be doing a show with him about 2 weeks for March Madness, probably. Not even that, like 10 days or something. So, yeah, yes, we will be doing the junior bracketology as well, which I don't think I've shown you those brackets yet. I got to DM them to you. Okay. But anyway, I like the finish. I've got to disagree with Robert here. I think it made sense as revenge on Yukio for tormenting him with these submissions over the last while they've been doing storytelling, there was another reaction we got that said something very similar, to be honest. So I'd like to give credit to that guy who basically said what I was going to say, to be honest, because I thought it makes sense if you look at the grand story at the end of the day.
I agree. And we also have another user jumping in here, Nicholas Gertz. He says, I'm going to read this here. I absolutely loved the story. If you saw the video package before the match, it showed Ueno getting choked out 4 times by Yukio since October. It makes complete sense that Ueno would get revenge by winning via choke out. That's some payback right there. And I agree with that too. I loved the match for the sake of the story that it was Ueno who had to overcome Yukio Sakaguchi. Sakaguchi, that's the key of the story. He did not respect Yukio Ueno. He choked him out so often that he just didn't respect the guy. And for Ueno, the match was about gaining respect from Sakaguchi, which in the end worked out. So all the submission training he did, whether or not it was only for the video, we don't know that. But that was a key element to the story. And I want to add one thing too. It's very clear to me that Yuki Ueno is a project for DDT. They see this guy as a potential main event talent. And they compare him, I think, a lot to Konosuke Takeshita because the comparisons are very obvious between the two, I think. And Takeshita, too, is a guy that has a style that is very versatile. He can do the flying. He can do the high-octane matches. He can do the submission-style matches that he did with Shinya Aoki. And I think that they want to go in a similar direction with Yuki Ueno, that he kind of is a complete package to be a future DDT main eventer.
Absolutely, and justifiably so. To me, I think his performances are awesome. I thought this was a great match, personally. I'm really surprised because I thought I was going to have a hot take by saying it was my favorite match of the show, but actually this has a very close rating on Cage Match right now. 8.56 for this and 8.55 for the main event. So it's pretty much even. It's virtually even. The semi-main event actually has 3 more votes too. That's something I kind of look at sometimes. So I really like this match and I thought they did a great job. And I think Ueno, this guy's proven himself repeatedly over the last year that he has everything it takes to be a main event level player. He's one of my favorite wrestlers in the company to watch. He has been for a long time now, and he's totally lived up to every expectation I had for him.
Yeah, I kind of bounce back and forth between which match I liked more.
They were so different, too. That's something I love. Much like we talked about on the Noah show. Like, there's very good similarities there, too, because you had the national title match, which was much more realistic, and I think that's the same thing with this one here. This is more of a grappling style, you know, submissions and things like that, whereas the main event was more of a traditional match. So I think that it's great that you have two great matches at the top of the card, but both very different styles.
Really can make a decision right now, kind of bouncing back and forth. But
you could say one thing today, and then tomorrow you might say something else.
I don't have to make a decision.
Yeah, exactly. They were both great at the end of the day. But I will. I stylistically, this appealed to me more, but the other one was great. I couldn't blame you if you liked the main event more either.
Yeah. So going down the card here, we had an 8-man tag match, All Out. Akito, Konosuke Takeshita, Shunma Katsumata, and Yuki Ueno in his return match faced Damnation, Daisuke Sasaki, Matt Pauly, Soma Takao, and Yuji Hino. Emphasis, of course, being on Yuji Hino versus Yuki Ueno because they're going to have a singles match down the line, but also on a potential program between Yuji Hino and Konosuke Takeshita when they did stereo German suplexes on two guys inside the ring, which looked very impressive. So Yuji Hino is finally getting a singles program. I'm very happy about that. Yuki Ueno looked good in here too, getting the pinfall in the match in his return. So I was happy about that. Otherwise, I thought it was a fine 8-man tag match. And that's about it for me.
Yeah, I agree. I'm really looking forward to see when Hino can wrestle Takeshita in a match. Because Takeshita did a lot of selling here, actually. Mm-hmm. And I thought that's something I really liked. I love when there's main eventers who aren't afraid to be unselfish in the mid-card. And I love seeing that here. Much like the current champion of DDT and his career, I would say.
A very unselfish promotion.
Yeah, exactly. So I love seeing Takeshita, you know, put these guys over, sell for these guys, and I thought him and Hino could have a heck of a match. Hino and Ueno are going to have a match, and that makes sense because they're two big guys, you know. you know, it's pretty logical that that would be a good first base for them to go to. But, yeah, a good mid-card match. I didn't think it was, you know, something super spectacular, but I thought it was a good mid-card match and a very worthy third from the top match.
I think I have a strong feeling that Takeshita versus Yuji Hino will be a match on the road for Takeshita to become number one contender.
That would be great. I would love if they could build up Hino to that level and be a number one contender caliber player, because you know he's got the talent for it. And you know, yes. Like he's, you know, like everybody knows that. So he could he could get it done in the ring, but I hope that they could give him up to that level. And I think Hino is going to get a push too. I think they have plans for him in 2021.
Oh, yeah. Clearly. He got derailed when he was injured. He was on a strong push last year too. So they're going to continue that push, I guess, here too. Seeds planted here with Takeshita and Hino, as we said, and seeds also planted in the match between Smile Pisari, Harashima and Yuji Okabayashi, and Katsutada Higuchi and Yuki Onaya in the mid-card. The match was clearly designed to put Yuki Onaya over. We said that before the show, and it turned out exactly that way. Yuki Onaya was able to look good against Okabayashi and Harashima, while at the same time losing to the much more experienced tag team. Harashima and Okabayashi getting a tag team win here. And also, they stood up to Higuchi after the match, kind of signaling that they would challenge for the KOD tag team title, which would be a great program.
Yeah, I was just thinking that too. I was really hoping that Harashima and Okabayashi would go for the tag titles at some point. I think they'd be a great team. Listen, nothing Okabayashi could do is going to be not awesome, pretty much. So, you know, and even here, I thought he got the best out of Naya. Obviously, Higuchi is a really great talent. I know we both love him. Ever since, I think, we probably first saw him when it was the DNA days, I think.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think we and a lot of people saw that this guy could be something really special. And he's totally lived up to those expectations in the ring. He's yet to really get that top tier push. But I think in the last year, they've definitely done him right. You know, they've got him on the good course now, and to where he's even a champion contender next month.
Still only 32 years old, so a lot of time left on his career.
That's true. Once he gets to his 50s, he'll have a much better shot in these Bima promotions, these Cyber Fight promotions. Yeah. But I just want to say, too, that I think that these guys all did well, but for me, this is just something, I don't know if this is a personal thing, maybe you agree, maybe you don't. For me, this is a little bit hurt coming off the heels of watching that Noah tag match, because Naya did good in this match, but he's no Inamura either, is what it shows. I think the match has kind of served very similar purposes. Yeah. You know, you have a guy going for the title next, same with Kaito and same with Higuchi, and then you have the guy here, it's kind of like the young big guy, but to me, Inamura like totally blew everything up, and that's why that was like my favorite match on that show. And here Naya was like, Naya did good by his standards, but I still don't know if he's ready to be a big part of the promotion or anything yet. He still feels like there's a way to go for him.
They want him to be. They clearly want him to be. But when you've seen his start in his career in Real Japan Pro Wrestling, his movement was really off, really awkward. He's slowly getting more experience here, and I think we'll have to give him more time to really make a conclusion to what he's able to do. He's only 26 years old too, so a lot of time left before he enters his 50s too. we'll see about Naya then, but I think he's a project. DDT wants him to succeed. He has lost a lot of weight. His body looks much, much better than it did when he started early on. In his early 20s, he was a very big guy. Now much more lean.
Sumo guy.
Exactly. So we'll see about that, how that goes on. But onto the topic, Dylan, of a guy in his 50s. What do you think? Does Super Delphin has a shot on any title in DDT?
He's entering his prime.
Even older than Akiyama.
That's true. I said, let's give him a shot here. 53 years old. He is the one. He could be the bridge. You know, like that's what this could all be setting up. A huge bridge match where Akiyama faces Muto for the double titles here. Just like in New Japan, they're trying to unify the titles, and they bring that idea here.
They brought that idea up, by the way, in the press conference. Yes. And Muto said he did not sign with CyberFight, he signed with Noah.
Okay.
So no double title match.
Okay. I guess all of our dreams are ruined. But that's when Akiyama is the champion. Maybe if Delphin won the title, he would change his mind on there.
Maybe.
But yeah, so Delphin, this match was like the feel-good match of the year.
This totally ruled. I loved it.
This was totally awesome. Complete tribute to Michinoku Pro in the 90s.
Yes. When we discussed the card, we weren't really sure why Super Delphin was in this match, because we didn't know going in that Gran Naniwa is Maki Ito's favorite wrestler.
I wish I had known, because her appearance on this show was like my favorite Maki Ito performance in her entire life. Coming out with
so happy.
Coming with the Naniwa claws, doing the dance. She was completely awesome in this match. I loved it. They even had like the Kaientai pose from the other team, the triple team. Like, this was so good. If you're a fan of 90s impro wrestling, and there were tons of great talent to come out of that. Some of these guys are still around working to this day. Like, to see these six do this, and especially Maki Ito, she stole the show with her Naniwa impersonation. And obviously seeing Delphin again was just great. I always thought, to me, Delphin was a sort of unsung hero of sorts of the juniors, because I think the 90s and the junior heavyweight scene was the golden age of junior heavyweights in Japan. And he's a guy that, because he was seen, he has this, you know, Super Delphin is kind of like a dolphin gimmick almost. And his finishing move, the Delphin Clutch, is very comedic in style.
Yes, but he sits on the guy.
Yeah. Well, he there's theatrics to it, okay? Listen, you know, if you look up the old Wikipedia page before they threw off all the moves, his finishing move would say Delphin Clutch, and in parentheses it would say sit on guys with theatrics on there. But yeah, he twists the guy's arm, he spins around his finger to the crowd, he twists his leg up. It's a whole pin clutch string. So I will not tolerate this disrespect to the Delphin Clutch. But this was a lot of fun, man. Such a good time. This is the kind of comedy that touches my heart, Stringer, right here. This is what I want to see in DDT more of, and less of guys' asses powering the building, which we saw earlier. But to me, this was such a fun match. Like, truly the feel-good match of the year, in my opinion. And I loved Maki Ito in this. I thought this was, seriously, like one of my favorite performances of her career.
Yes, I enjoyed this match so much, especially because of what you said, the Michinoku Pro history. Everybody is so fond of Michinoku Pro Wrestling in the 90s, and it's really unfortunate that Michinoku Pro themselves can't really benefit from that, because it's all nostalgia and they don't really have anything going for this part in their company. They, of course, still have Jinsei Shinsaki and the great Sasuke, but everything else is all over the place with all the Michinoku Pro talent that was there in the 90s. Dick Togo wrestles for them sometimes, but it's really only a tiny group. And to me, I have to imagine that they don't really own their own footage of the 90s, that it's owned by Samurai TV and the other TV stations it was on. So they can't really benefit from that. So that's very unfortunate for Michinoku Pro Wrestling. And another unfortunate thing, you mentioned the Kaientai pose. They mentioned Dick Togo, and I had to think again what Dick Togo is doing these days, except for wrestling in Michinoku Pro, that is.
Try to forget all that. Just remember the Dick Togo.
I'm trying hard.
Remember the Dick Togo we know, Stringer. Don't look at him now. Don't look at him. Do not look at him in New Japan.
Don't turn around!
Yeah, exactly. Don't do it on there. But yes, completely. If you only know Dick Togo from New Japan, completely. Different performer in Michinoku Pro and every other company except for New Japan, actually. He was a much different performer, and including DDT at different points. So it's a shame that, yeah, that's a whole thing. But the Kaientai pose for itself, it brought back fond memories of Dick Togo, Menz Teo, Shiryu, Kazayashi, Taka, all of them.
They named them all, by the way, on this show.
Yes, that's true. You know, the Kaientai DX was a huge faction at the time, and you know, you had guys on the other end, guys like Great Sasuke, guys like Tiger Mask 4, another New Japan guy, was an impro original. You know, you had a lot of guys on there, you know, at the end of the day. So just a fun match if you're nostalgic for that time period, and I would definitely recommend going to watch some of those old impro matches too, from especially in 96, I think was their peak. 96 97, you saw some amazing Michinoku Pro matches. Like, this obviously wasn't as, you know, like at the time those were revolutionary matches, nobody had seen like that. This was more like just for fun and nostalgia sakes, so it was, but it's still great in that vein.
And having talked to Chris Brooks for a cup of coffee or two, I'm pretty sure that he was a fan, or he's a fan of this style of wrestling as well. So him and Maki Ito, this was really a great moment for them to be in this six-man match. And as you said, it was just a feel-good moment. I was smiling from ear to ear when watching this match. So this is the energy that the promotions under the DDT banner bring, much like TJP too. Just the fun, the excitement, the energy, this completely was DDT.
Absolutely. Like this is the best version of DDT, I feel like, in my opinion, this kind of match. And that's something that they don't always do, but when they go there, they pull it off spectacularly and better than any other promotion.
Yes, and so we had another style of wrestling on this card with the Yoshi match. Maya Yuki and Saki Akai defeated Miyako Matsumoto and Soriano. And it turned out in the end that they all left Matsumoto in the ring and that Soriano is now joining the team of Maya Yuki and Saki Akai.
She's a perfect fit, actually. Like
she fits perfectly, yes.
Yeah, like those three together, they all fit perfectly, honestly. So it's a great faction. I love them. And I don't know what to say about that. I think this is an amazing group that they've put together here. Poor Matsumoto, though.
Oh, yeah.
That's a sad thing. She's honestly an old favorite of mine. When I first started watching wrestling, her gimmick in Ice Ribbon, she was still really young at this time, her gimmick was the dancing queen. She would come out to the ABBA song, like, complete with dancing. In fact, so I've always had a soft spot for her. When she won the title in Ice Ribbon the last time a few years ago, I thought that was a totally emotional and well-done moment. Then, obviously, she went freelance and did her crazy self-produced shows that she's done. And things have only gotten crazier for her over the years. And now she gets turned on by Soriano. But honestly, Ano fits much better with the other two than her. Miyamoto is not on the same level. Our Matsumoto is not on the same level, sadly. So I think that the faction is what's going to carry this. Whatever they do with DDT with the Joshi wrestlers is going to be carried by these three. Yeah. And I can't wait to see what they do next.
I had no idea why they went to the ref bump in this match. That served no purpose whatsoever. Match was fine.
It wasn't a great match. Honestly, it wasn't meant to be that. But, you know, like I said, it accomplished something at least. It wasn't just a complete waste.
Yeah, not so great either, in my opinion, but it has a pretty good rating. Still on Gage Match was the match for the KOD 8-man tag team title. Not a fan of that kind of comedy. I'm much more a fan of the kind of comedy that we saw in the Michinoku Pro match.
If you love anal, this was the match for you. This was your dose.
It was your dose.
It was unfortunately my dose too. If you had come back and said you didn't watch it, I'd probably get mad at you. Exactly. Because I had to watch it. Like, don't make me suffer. Like, you know, if you don't want to watch it, that's cool. But tell me first, so I don't have to watch it. Do we really need 8-man belts? By the way, we had the 10-man titles.
The 10-man belts, yes.
And instead of just getting rid of them because they never were able to defend them, they said, well, let's just take a belt away. Now it's the 8-man title belts.
Love it.
Okay. That's mildly amusing. I will tell you, I will agree. As much as I didn't really like the anal stuff of this match and the, you know, powering the building and all of that.
Dylan, I think that in the time when we have a lot of titles, and in most promotions, much more titles than there is any use for, I think that DDT making fun of this is completely appropriate.
I do. That was the best part of the match, how they changed the 10-man titles to the 8-man titles.
And it looked so goofy when they had that, for each belt, they had one guy presenting the title, and they had to move around at the same moment to show the titles to every part of the crowd. That was just incredible. Loved it.
I thought Hirata was pretty funny, too. Like, I'm always into his act, like the Tokyo
Ghoul. At least he
won. Yeah, that's true. At least he won. I'm always amused by his act. Obviously, I was a big fan of Magnum Tokyo, and I think that that's always good. That's a more nostalgia of the old days. Not necessarily Impro, that was more like Toriumon, but still, it gives me good nostalgia at the end of the day. And that's all I hope for, but anything Dino's involved in is not going to be up my alley.
Sadly, Mitsuki Watase suffered an injury in the opening match, an elbow injury that will keep him out of action for some time now. I think an elbow fracture even. So that's sad because they put on a great showing in the opening match, I thought, in the tag team match that they had with Yusuke Okada and Toi Kojima, losing to Hideki Okatani and Mitsuki Watase, especially Watase and Okada fighting over who is Jun Akiyama's favorite son. They showed great fire, great energy, and I would have loved to see the program going on, but unfortunately that won't be happening now.
This is heartbreaking, Straka, because
it really is.
I love this feud in all seriousness. I thought they worked so well together. Watase is so improved. Look at where he was before Akiyama showed up to where he's at now. It's like a totally different performer, man. Like, this guy is so awesome. And especially Okada. I could marry this guy. Like, I feel like he is so good at wrestling. Like, I love this man. Seriously, like he's like, if I tried to create a great wrestler myself, like, but in real life, he's who I would come up with, I think. Like, his wrestling style, he's so good. He totally reminds me of some of those great, you know, juniors of the 90s and stuff like that, especially some of the heated guys, not necessarily the Impro style, but more like the New Japan style, like the Kanemoto style. I feel like he's very similar, and following that path with the hatred that he showed in this match for Watase. Otani, another one, like those guys. Like, this is what it felt like, an Otani and Kanemoto struggle, like these two. You know, I got to say, I was pretty impressed with Okatani, too, on there. He's only one letter away from being Otani as well. on there.
And Hideki, too.
Yeah, there you go. Another one. Another inspiration for all of these people to follow. Although he's not
Joshi
a junior.
Kojima also sent out a tweet when Toi Kojima made his debut, so we got a lot of influences here.
That's true. That's true. Toi needs to take a few looks at his non-brother and brother name Kojima. Look at how to throw those chops. You gotta go, baby.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you gotta hit hard, my guy. That's what I gotta tell Toi Kojima. You got to hit hard, my guy. And like, look at Okada, look at Watase go. Man, I hate this injury for Watase, man. That really sucks. I hate that that's happened, and I hate that's gonna ruin this feud, or at least derail it for a while.
Yeah,
it won't ruin it, but it will take it away for a while. And I thought there was so much gas left in the tank between these guys. If they had a singles match, the energy would be through the roof. They would totally get over. It would be awesome. And they could eventually become a tag team down the line, too, if they wanted, if they, you know, found respect for each other. Or they could just be hated rivals. I think that totally works, too.
You know, the good thing is that they just can pick this up anytime when Watase returns now. Hell, imagine Jun Akiyama adding Yusuke Okada to the Junretsu group without consenting with Watase. That would make him even angrier and would make him want to go after Okada even more.
Absolutely. I think that's the perfect way to handle this storyline. And it gives Watase something to do. It sucks for the injury that he has to go, but he'll be okay at the end of the day if he has something to come back to and they have plans for him, because he's showing and he's proving that he has the talent and the ability to make people care about him, that he'll be just fine when he gets back. So, well wishes to Watase, and hopefully he gets better. Hopefully they have something big planned for Okada. I think he's been... the match he and Ueno had last month was awesome. I thought one of my favorite matches last month. And everything about him, I think he's a spectacular performer, super underrated, and I love watching him. Every time he's on the screen, he pops off to me. Just like in All Japan, I felt the same way. Whenever he was on the screen, it felt like we were witnessing a supernova of a talent. And I think he's showing it a lot more now in DDT, getting more opportunities to show it with this feud. And I hope that they have something planned for him down the line, because I think he could totally be a main event player. And maybe not right now, but eventually, if they build him up properly, he has everything it takes to be a top star for this company, in my opinion.
I hope they give him the chances, because he really deserves them when you just look at how he works and how great he is. I agree with you. And on the last show, we talked about complete shows and rating complete shows. So we talked about the Budokan show, that is still one of my favorite shows in a long, long time, or maybe my favorite show in a long, long time. And I also enjoyed this one very much, because up and down the card, there was something for me here. We had great wrestling matches on top of the card. We had fun multi-man matches. We had a good tag team match in the middle of the card that served a purpose to put over Naya. Great opening match. Then the comedy that wasn't mine in the second match. But still, though, great comedy with the six-man of the Michinoku Pro style. So up and down, I thought that DDT delivered a great show here.
And they were really built, honestly. The Budokan and this show, there were a lot of similarities to how they were built. And that, not just the old guy winning the title at the end, but like I said, you had the more shoot-influenced semi-main event to offset the main event. You had a tag match centered around getting a young guy over. You had a well-rounded group of matches where different styles. Obviously, DDT did it a little bit better than, or not better, but different than Noah. But so because they had the comedy, they had the Joshi wrestlers come in. So they had a lot of more different things, especially in the undercard. But overall, I think both shows really delivered. And I agree with you. Top to bottom, the second match wasn't for me. But everything else, I pretty much enjoyed and had a good time watching. And I thought this was one of the better DDT shows I can remember. That's one of my problems. Whenever we watch the full DDT shows, even where there are a great match or somebody that really steps up in performance, they have a really great young roster. So you're always going to get that when you tune into a DDT show. But a lot of times it feels like they're going really long, aimless shows with a lot of dumb crap that I don't really like, to be honest. So that really inflates the shows to me, so I can't really enjoy them as full shows. But this show, I think, was a great full show, and I think that's something really special on that end. The Budokan show, comparing them, I think that one had more meaning at the end of the day. You know, Noah coming to Budokan for the first time and all that time.
And I wasn't really trying to compare them. I was just going to make the point that as a complete show,
I'm comparing them. So, okay. you don't have to, but I am. They were both great shows anyway. Like whatever you want to compare them or whatever, they were both great shows. I think the Budokan had more meaning than this one. I think that there's more hope in Akiyama than Muto, though. At the same time, too, in the future, I think my feelings overall were much more positive rather than Muto winning. It felt like, to me, this is just my personal opinion again, when he won that title, it felt like the wrong thing for Noah to end the Budokan show after all of this struggle to go there with a non-Noah guy, and especially him, to hold up that title. It felt like it should have been somebody, a Noah guy, saying, "I am Noah," which is Go's whole story. But regardless, it felt like that was the right way. Whereas here, it felt like the totally logical conclusion and the right thing. So I think they both have their positives and negatives at the end of the day. But I think the Budokan show has more meaning at the end of the day. That's the only thing I would say. But I thought they were both great shows. Like I said, there were some differences, but some similarities too that they put together. And you can see that, you know, it feels like they have similar plans, especially at the top for both companies. And there's great company. I don't know what word to describe this, but a very synergy. Fluid situation. It's a great synergy. We're perfect. See, you're a smart guy, Striga. You're smarter than me. You know these words.
Sometimes I do.
Yeah, sometimes. But yes, great company synergy between them. And I think it's a good thing at the end of the day, depending on where they go for here. And I think the great thing is both companies, regardless of what show you liked better, they both feel like they have positive and very good upward momentum right now.
I can absolutely agree with that. The next set of cards, DDT, starts on February 23rd with a show from Nagoya. In the main event of that show, we have a KOD Tag Team title match between Katsuhara Higuchi and Yukio Sakaguchi, the champions. They go on against the Sauna Club of Konosuke Takeshita and Mao. Also, six-man tag team title on the line. Akito, Katsuki Hirata, and Shota defend against Sanshiro Takagi, Harashima, and Dancho Kudino. And there is also the match Yuki Ino against Yuji Hino. Plus, a very cool-looking eight-man tag team match, by the way, Dylan. Shima, T-Hawk, El Lindemann, and Shikihiro Irie against Junakiyama, Makoto Ishii, Mitsuki Watase, is not on the show, and Hideki Okatani. It was before his injury was announced, but...
Replace him with Okada.
Yeah, replace him with Okada. This is a great-looking match.
Absolutely, that sounds awesome. I can't wait to see that.
DDT Sauna Club versus The Nation again, Endo and Sasaki against Yuki Ueno and Shuma Katsumata, and some undercard stuff, Chris Brooks and Maki Ito again against Antonio Honda and Saki Akai, Toru Washi and Yuki Onaya against Soma Takao and Matt Pauly, Hiroshi Yamato and Nobuhiro Shimatani against Yusuke Okada and Keigo Nakamura. So move one of those to the 8-man tag with the Strong Hearts, and that will be a great show on paper.
Absolutely.
DDT Into the Fight, February 28th from Curriken Hall. Iron Man heavy metal title 5-way match. The Young Bucks autobiography, Killing the Business, still the champion right now, goes against Katsuki Hirata, Dancho Kudino, Antonio Honda, and Saki Akai, if the book is still the champion at this point, Dylan.
It's going to be tough. Can he last? Can the book last to make it this far?
Depends on who reads the book, I guess.
I don't know. Watch out. Who is the biggest reader on the DDT roster, you think?
Well, Katsuki Hirata took the package when the book came in, so maybe it's Hirata.
He could be the greatest intellectual.
But he tried to win the title from the book, and it didn't really work out, so I'm not sure about him.
Okay, who's the second greatest reader on the roster? Who's the biggest intellectual on the roster? Somebody that would want to read?
Shinya Aoki.
You heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen. Shinya Aoki, the next champion.
There's not a lot announced yet on this card. DDT Extreme title. Shunma Katsumata versus Mao. Plastic boxes and Lego. Go for it.
It's going to hurt. Yes. Sounds painful. Sounds painful.
DDT Daydream Believer 2021, also from Kirkland Hall, March 14. Yuki Ueno will defend the Universal title against a yet unknown challenger. So we don't know anything about this. But we do know that on Judgment 2021, Kirkland Hall, March 28, Jun Akiyama defends the KOD Openweight title against Katsu Sada Higuchi. That's it for DDT.
Can't wait for some of these matches. Some of these shows sound really good. I'll definitely be picking and choosing and checking them out in the future.
Also, another big show coming up is on March 3rd, Stardom's 10th anniversary, All-Star Dream Cinderella from Tokyo Nippon Budokan. And if this card is not complete, that's on Stardom because I'm reading it from their homepage right now. There is a 10-year anniversary premium Stardom All-Star Rumble with Yusuke Aikawa in this match. Yoko Bito, Yuri Haruka, Yuna Manase, Hiromi Miura, Mio Wakisawa, Momoe Nakanashi, and others. So basically a rumble of stars from the past.
Yeah, you know what you're going to get with these. They did something similar last year when they had the No Fan show they did. They had a very similar match where like I said, they had all kinds of people there. Sayahida came in like three times in different costumes. you're gonna get some more craziness like that in this match. It's just a lighthearted match to get some of the old stars like Aikawa in, which is another prediction I made, by the way. Another correct True. Prediction. there, listen to that. My predictions are hot and heavy right now, Striga. This is a golden week for me, I feel like. But so it's going to be a fun little match. It's not going to be anything too crazy, but it'll be fun to watch.
Then we have for the high-speed title, Azumi against Natsupoi. Dylan, what do you think about this match?
I think Azumi is one of the unheralded stars of Stardom. I think she's doing great work up and down, and I felt that way for years. I really felt like, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, she had already, you know, like, I get where they were coming from. They were booking her to kind of, like, prove herself and all of that, but to me, she had already proved herself, to be honest with you, as a wrestler, and this high-speed run has been really strong. I love everything about her wrestling. I think she's a great personality. She has everything that it takes to be a star in the world of Stardom. Natsupoi, I really, really liked in Tokyo Joshi Pro. I thought she had grown a lot, and her charisma was really strong, and I felt like she was on her way to become a star. But since she made that jump over to Stardom, in my opinion, she's been kind of mid-tier, in all honesty. I haven't really been that impressed with her, even compared to where she was at in Tokyo Joshi Pro. It feels like something just hasn't clicked yet for her, but putting her against someone like Azumi is a great way to help that along, and I think Azumi can do no wrong on this card. I think she's going to do a great job.
I agree with you on Azumi. She has been in the ring with a lot of very experienced wrestlers in recent time on the year-end climax and attack match with Riho against Mayu Iwatani and Starlight Kid. She had a title match against Shuri recently, so getting more experience with these kind of veteran wrestlers helps her a lot, but she's very good to begin with too. Very smooth wrestler. Yeah, it's going to be the time for Natsupoi to really show up here. As I said, there's been some wrestlers from TJP coming over, and there's a lot of talent in Stardom, and it's really not easy to stand out amongst them.
Yeah, and they brought a lot of new people in all at once, too, and we're kind of focusing on a ton of different people. Mm. And I think it was inevitable that some people were going to get lost in the shuffle a little bit, and I think she fell victim to that. But maybe this is a good way to get her back on the right track again.
One match that I predicted is actually going to happen with a 10th anniversary special match, the Momo Watanabe against Nanae Takahashi.
Yeah, should be great. Obviously, they built up the feud with Nanae and Yoshiko coming in. We all kind of figured it would be Yoshiko and Mayu, and what would you do with Nanae? Momo was a great choice, and you correctly predicted it, and it led to what should be a really great match. Takahashi, she's only had a handful of matches since coming back. It was really tough because I wanted to put her in that March Madness thing for the Joshi sign, but it's like, man, five matches. That's not really fair at the end of the day. But she's a great talent. I've always been a huge fan of her work. And literally, since 20 years ago, I was a huge fan of her work. And it's really cool, honestly. This is something that I haven't seen in forever. To see her on the same card as Momoe Nakanishi is awesome. I think that's great because they were very intricately linked in their earlier run when All Japan Women was still around. They were kind of like the stars of the future for that company. And obviously they closed down and things have taken all kinds of twists and turns since then. But to see them on the same card, they're not in the same match, but on the same card is really cool to me. And I think as a match, this is going to be completely awesome. And I think that Momo is going to get the just have a great match on the Budokan Hall show. They have to be very happy with both of these performers, but especially Momo, I think, is a good sign of confidence for her.
The second match within the storyline, you just mentioned it, Mayu Iwatani against Yoshiko. What do you expect from this?
I think this is the match that I think is going to have the most eyes on it. Honestly, this feels like the main event in a lot of ways.
It does, yeah.
You know, and it makes sense. Mayu's been the top star forever in stardom, or years and years. Yoshiko, she's the one that has all the buzz, and she's got the popularity on TikTok. She's got the controversy of all the stuff with Aja Asakawa all those years ago, finally making her return to the company. The interpromotional feud in and of itself with Seed and Stardom going at it right now, which they've really hit on in the last month. I mean, to me, this is going to be a great match. I think they're perfect opponents for each other stylistically. I think before everything happened and went south for her in Stardom, I thought Yoshiko was a tremendous talent, in all honesty. And I think that she had a lot to her. I think she's been a tremendous talent since then. Like, since her comeback in the ring, she's done a great job. So for me, this is going to be the match that feels like the main event. It's going to have the emotional stuff attached to it. And I think the work itself is going to be the best on the show, too. So this is what I'm looking forward to. I don't know how they play it, to me, other than I think Mayu will win. But it's tough to say here, because you're going to want Stardom to stand tall on the Budokan.
Yeah, and that's really good that they did a second singles match, because this way Seedring can at least win one of the matches. But I wouldn't completely rule it out that they win both matches and the story will continue with Stardom having to fight and claw to eventually defeat Seedring.
That's true. I mean, that would make sense. It feels like, though, I'd be surprised if Stardom doesn't get one. This is their biggest show in their history. I can't imagine them just selling out. I get where you're coming from, but what show are they going to do that realistically is going to be bigger than this in the future? So it's going to be tough. I mean, they could come back. I'm sure if this is successful, they could come back when the full fans are allowed again, and maybe they think. But I mean, that's going to be a while, though. Are they really going to drag that out all the way to then? So to me, I think one of them have to win. And I think of the two, I think to me, the emotional factor too has to be come into play here. If Mayu beats Yoshiko, that's going to be seen as a tremendous emotional triumph for the entire company over this person who's been villainized for years at the end of the day. Takahashi doesn't really have that same controversy surrounding her at the end of the day. So, I could see it either way. And I wouldn't be against it if they had both won and they continued this feud. I think it's led to great things. And, Seed, like we mentioned before in the past, they have a very small roster. So working with Stardom helps them fill out their cards and get more people in on their train. So it's a good thing for them. But yeah, I expect Mayu to win. I wouldn't be surprised if ACT actually shows up for some reason.
Yep.
I think it would be hilarious if she came in and sided with Yoshiko and turned on the company. That was a conspiracy theory I had. That, like, because I, to be honest, the way they set it up and the way they've always talked about it makes it feel like they would have some kind of forgiveness type of angle.
Yeah, I mean, would, like, it be too late to announce her as kind of the special ref or anything, right?
Oh, that's a total, like, American wrestling style of move, too, if that happened. I would love that. But, yeah, you know, it's not too late to announce her for something. If she is coming, though, I think that would be a very emotional thing. I'm sure, honestly, I really think they're trying to get something like that. They want all hands on deck of the show. Look at that Battle Royal they just had. like that, with all those names you had there. You've got people who haven't been there forever. Like, even Koguma was announced for that.
Right.
And she has never been around in forever, you know. But, yeah, you know, so you've got a lot of people here. They want all hands on deck for this show. So I'm sure they made the call. Maybe she doesn't want to do that, and I think that's completely understandable as well if that happens. But I think that there's going to be some kind of angle coming out of this. I don't think it's just going to be like a clean finish and they, you know, it just all goes in the past now. We're moving on from it. I think something's going to happen, either some kind of forgiveness angle with Yoshiko and the company, with ACT herself, a turn. I don't know, but I think there's going to be some kind of angle coming out of this that has an emotional hook to it, because I think they can't really book this without having that or acknowledging it. It would just be kind of weird.
It would be. We'll see about that. But the ideal scenario, in my opinion, would be Nanae winning her match and Yoshiko losing to Mayu Iwatani. That's what I would do if I was on the negotiating table.
I think that's what's going to happen too. If I were to make prediction, I think that's going to how it's going to play out. It makes perfect sense, and you know, Takahashi gets to put herself over one more time, which I approve of on here. But I completely agree with you. I think that's the right move, and that's what I would do, and I think it's what's going to happen. But I do think there's ways, like I said, if they get really crazy and creative with the Yoshiko and Mayu match, I think for sure Nanae is winning over Momo. I think there's doubt in Yoshiko and Mayu who would win if they get creative with it. But I think the most logical aspect is they would win. And even then, like, if they both split a match, you could always build up to a big match later on, too. Like, have the one-on-one draw.
Sure.
And, you know, you can set up for a third match, maybe with Mayu and Takahashi going at it, or the winners of the two matches facing.
There's a lot to tell with this storyline between the companies that they have, and they also have something going on with Marvelous, so they really opened up in recent months. We'll see about how that goes on. We have two matches left on this card, actually.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of more talent announced, so they will announce more matches. For the World of Stardom title, Utami Hayashishita defends the title against Saya Kamitani, former tag team champions, going one-on-one in a singles main event match, Dylan.
I think that this was a pretty ballsy move to put Kamitani in this main event, and I know they love her, and I know they want to push the young talent, and she's been, it feels like, the chosen one for a while now. Like, pretty much since she stepped foot into Stardom, she hit that crazy dancing entrance. She's a former, you know, pop idol, AKB48 adjacent. So I knew that they would have some big plans for her. But to put her in the main event of Budokan Hall felt like too much too soon, honestly.
I can see that.
Yeah, in my opinion. Like, she, as a worker, they give her leeway to do whatever she wants, pretty much. Like, she can do all kinds of high-flying moves. She does spectacular stuff. And a lot of times, it's really sloppy, in all honesty. You know, she's not the best at it, to be perfectly honest with you. But that's to help her get better. I took notes of last year's 5-star Grand Prix. And if you look at the match times for all the performers, she was like a top 5 performer in terms of the amount of time she was wrestling in that whole tournament, and that was something that really surprised me. So it's clear they want her to improve, they want her to get better, and they want her to be a top star. I think she's a good choice. She has super charisma, a great look. Obviously, the pop idol background is very good. So she has a lot going for her. I think just it's a little too soon for her to be in this main event spot, going for the red belt against Hayashishita, who was a very similar case where she had the reality TV show background. They had big plans for her the minute she walked in the door, but she felt like a complete product a lot sooner than Kamitani, who I think has a lot to her, but she still needs to get a little bit more well-rounded, smooth out some of those edges, and I think she could be a spectacular performer too one day. But to main event Budokan, this big show for Stardom, is so
can be very frightening for a young athlete like Kamitani is, and let's just hope that she won't crumble under the pressure.
I think that they're going to work a really smart match in this. I think they're not going to have her. They might build up to one big spot for her, kind of like in the Tokyo Dome. Remember, yeah. We did those matches, but they built up to her doing the Phoenix Splash at the end of the day, and like they can build up to some kind of huge spot for her. Obviously, her athletic ability is off the charts too, much better than pretty much anybody on the roster, honestly. But still, as a performer, a complete performer, she's not there yet. But I think they're going to work a smart match, build up to maybe one big spot for her, and I think Utami is going to win ultimately. But you know, I mean, they put her in the main event, so you know, I don't think anybody was expecting that when the talk of this show came about. I don't think anybody thought that Kamitani is in the main event. Obviously, I don't think anybody thought that. So I think it's very interesting how she was the pick here.
Very interesting indeed.
It kind of makes sense, just to slightly defend them, it kind of makes sense when they have the seedling stuff too on the undercard. So I understand their thinking, and like, we have these main event matches with these two non-title matches, so let's put somebody new over in the title match. I get where they're coming from on that, but I still think it's beautiful.
And there is one more match that will be one of the top sellers of the show, definitely, because it's a storyline that has been going on for a long time in Stardom. Julia takes on Tam Nakano, and they are going to play off a stipulation that has a lot of history in Yoshi wrestling. It's a hair versus hair match.
Yep, one of the most famous matches between Yamada and Toyota in All Japan Wrestling was All Japan Women's Wrestling was the hair versus hair match. And they bring it back for this feud. I think it's interesting. to be honest with you, I didn't really see this coming at all with these two. To shave one of them bald, I think, was a really...
It's going to be an interesting aesthetic. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know about that one, to be honest with you. Especially with Stardom's crowd. I don't know what they're...
I think that's the intrigue here.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, we've seen in the past, and I wouldn't be surprised if Nakano had, like, her hand in some of this. Because remember, they... built a couple of years ago, they built an entire feud that built up to this exploding bat death match, and it didn't get over at all with the fans. Like, the fans hated it. Like, they turned against it. She was a big fan of like Onita and death matches and all of that. She wanted to bring that.
Yeah, she's the great Tom.
The great Tom, of course. Who can forget that? But yeah, I remember when she trained, she was like swimming in the pool that Onita had the pool death match in and stuff. And that was pretty crazy. But the fans didn't take to it, unfortunately. I think she's improved a ton as a performer since those days. Because when she came in, I was thinking, man, like, this is totally like an idol type of wrestler at the end of the day. Like, all looks, no substance. I'm not really a fan. But since then, in the last 2 years, she's greatly, greatly improved. I really have to give a lot of credit to Arisa Hoshiki and their feud with Tam Nakano and her. I think that improved Tom and brought her game up so much. She's a great storyteller. She has like a lot of great ideas. I think she's smart too, because she does stuff that gets people talking a lot as well. She's very good at getting publicity for herself. Sometimes it's negative publicity. Like, they had that angle with this feud where they were like, they were in the photo shoot or whatever, the modeling, and a lot of people were like, oh, this sucks. Like, we don't want
to start.
But like, that got people talking, and I think she's a big proponent of that. And she has this what I'm not a big proponent of is when she like flirts with Tai Chi and stuff whenever they do crossovers with New Japan. I mean, come on, Tai Chi? They're like, what is she thinking with that? I can't explain it. But it feels like she's somebody that knows how to get people talking. She's a big fan of that. So this is another example of that. This hair match got people talking at the end of the day. And I think regardless of who wins and loses, it's going to be a crazy moment for everybody involved, and a lot of people are going to talk about it. So I really think Nakano has her hand in this in some way, which makes me think she's going to lose, to be honest with you.
I was just going to say, let's make predictions here. You think Tam's going to lose? I think Tam's going to lose too.
Well, that's not very fun. We don't disagree at all.
We don't have to.
Wait, no, there's no rule that says we have to agree. You're right. I mean, I think the smart money, I think there's no way that they're going to shave Julia.
That would be so crazy.
Yeah, like that. I mean, they've pushed Julia a lot more than Tom. Like, even in this feud, Julia's got over on Tom a lot more than vice versa.
But I do think they should really continue going to put Julia on top to build the eventual win that Tom is getting in the future even more.
Yeah, it would be a great redemption arc.
Yeah,
I really think they dropped the ball. Like, that first show they came back last year, they really dropped the ball not having her and Jungle win the titles at that show, because the emotional output of it all would have been perfect. That would have been the perfect redemption story for her to win the white belt. But now, like, this feud has gone completely away from all of that into all of these different directions, and now it's about hair versus hair. And, like, her big win, like, let's say she loses this match, and down the line she finally beats Julia. It's like the feud has gone off in so many different directions that I don't think it means as much as it would have before. So, I mean, I don't know. To me, it's going to be hard to overcome. And I don't know what they really see in Nakano. She's a really interesting case. I don't really know how the company thinks of her at what level they think of her, because sometimes it feels like she's an important person in the company. And I think she is an important person in the company, but it feels like she's a top star. And then there's other times where it feels like she's always going under whenever she gets a chance to face a real top star. So I don't really know what they think of her at the end of the day and where they slot her. Julia, we know what they think of her. We know she's a top star.
Yeah, but given that they put Tama in this prominent position on the Budokan card, makes you think that they think of her as a top star.
That's a good point on there. You know, I completely agree with you, actually. So they must see her there, and they will give her a win eventually. I think you're right. But I do think that it won't be here. I think she's going to lose. I can't imagine them shaving Julia.
Me neither. Yes, so that is it for Stardom. I just have one more thing that is kind of a Stardom topic too, because just today, Kyoko Kimura, the mother of Hana Kimura, announced that there will be a memorial show for Hana on the first anniversary of her death on May 23rd in Currican Hall. She hasn't announced anything yet, so we don't know if that will be in collaboration with Stardom. You'd have to imagine that this will be. But nothing announced so far, other than that Kyoko said that she's the organizer, but has received a lot of help from many people. So, dude, I'm shaking right now as I'm reading this. This is going to be an intense show to watch.
Yeah. I figured something like this would happen, to be honest with you. Ever since this all happened last year, you know, I figured that this would be something they would use. And I think it's a great thing that she's involved with it. I think that's the most important thing. So we know it's not going to be exploitative or anything crazy like that. It's going to be done right. Hmm. So I'm very happy about that. And hopefully all the proceeds go to her and everything. And I'm sure everybody's going to be wanting to help out. Like they said in that press release, she's gotten a lot of help from a lot of people. And I'm sure there are a ton of wrestlers that are going to, you know, put their hand in this, have their hand in that. And it's going to be a great show, an emotional show for sure. But it's a good thing for her that she could get this. And hopefully, my biggest hope above anything else is that the people close to Hana, and especially Kyoko, but all of her friends and stuff that she made in wrestling, hopefully they can all get some sort of peace in their heart. And maybe this show will help them gain that.
Nothing more to add from my point. So Dylan, is there anything that you want to add at the end of the show?
Just, it's been a lot of fun doing these shows with you lately. Like, we've done a few lately, you know, back-to-back. Yes. And everything like that. So I appreciate that. It's a little bit of a new style, I guess, for us. But a lot of stuff's happened, you know. There's been a lot of shows going on. Exactly. Like, we're not going to just do the same thing when the world's changing around us on here. We got to change things up a little bit. So hopefully everybody out there, all the listeners out there, have really enjoyed the shows too. And, you know, hopefully enjoyed our prognostications of things too, whether it's Noah, New Japan. You know, this is, to me, is one of the few shows where you could talk about all this different stuff. Stardom, DDT, Tokyo Joshi Pro. And it's all back-to-back. So that's something I really love about our show. And I know the listeners are really appreciative of that fact too. I teased you off the air about a surprise that I was going to have at the end of the show. But earlier on, because you started off with Daytona, I wasn't expecting that. It spiraled out of control into many, many racing puns. But I would like to admit something on air to you. I don't think I've ever said this. I don't think I've ever told you this. I have never driven a car, actually.
Wow!
I've ridden motorcycles. Like, as long as I could have a vehicle, I've only driven motorcycles. Like, you know, my Kawasaki is outside. I enjoy them much better than driving a car, personally. So it's just, it's not like I hate them or something like that. It's just a personal choice on my end. That, I mean, I've ridden in cars before, but so I could never be eligible for NASCAR. I've only ridden motorbikes and motorcycles. So I would not be eligible for NASCAR at all, unfortunately, or Formula One. Or any other car-based racing proponent. So I just want to point that out there. I literally know nothing about cars at all either, by the way. Like if there were any problem with your car and you asked me for help on it, it would be like, you know, I would be...
It would be on fire instantly.
Exactly. That's exactly what would happen. If I even attempted to try and fix it, something would go wrong. You would have to go to a mechanic that would, you know, probably skeeze you out of money. Like, he'd find, like, 10 other things wrong with it, mysteriously. But yeah, see, that's the thing. Like, I don't know why. There's no reason. There's no explanation about it. But I just have always liked motorbikes better. I thought they were cooler.
That's so fine. I on my terms have never ridden a bicycle. So a motorcycle.
Bicycle. Totally. I never liked bicycles either. By the way, I like motorbikes much better than regular bicycles. See? Yeah, I thought you did ride a bicycle. Don't you have one now?
Yes, I do. I was just saying the wrong word.
Well, it's okay. The point is, it's not a car. Whether it's a bicycle or a motorbike, it's still not a car. But do you know, what kind of car do you have?
I have a Volkswagen. A Polo. Look, it's the name of the car. Polo.
I have a Kawasaki Ninja. That's the name of my motorbike. And I love it dearly. And I'm sure you love your car too, your VW, your Bug, as some people call it.
I've owned it for almost 10 years now.
Oh, wow, that's awesome. What color is it?
It's a mix between blue and purple.
Oh, okay. That seems really stylish. This seems like a Willy Wonka car right now. You've got it right now.
Yes. What's the color of your motorbike?
Of course, sky blue.
Of course.
Yeah, see, I'll show you a picture of it. I think I've shown it before on there. But yes, it's a very nice blue. But I just wanted to set the record straight. There will be no more car talk on the show in the near future.
I think a lot of people will be very happy about that.
Yes, I think we're all happier for it. But you started it, much like you tried to blame, others. I don't even remember for what. But I'm sure you blame something for somebody. I'm blaming you now. That's the thing about wrestling. You always need to put the blame off on other people. That's the way to success in wrestling, and some would say in life as well. So a life lesson on this show as well.
But actually, Dylan, this was a very fun show to do. Lots of influences from lots of great listeners on this show. So Let's end it on a positive note. Thank you all for your contributions to the show. Thank you if you're a Patreon subscriber, patreon.com/EasternLariat. Thank you if you're a follower on Twitter, twitter.com/EasternLariat. And of course, thank you all for listening, and goodbye.
Sayonara.
This is the MLW Radio Network.